Hello and welcome, everyone. 2022 is upon us. This is the Comic-Con Podcast Season 2, Episode 1. I am your host, of course, Justin, a.k.a. Nemesis Prime, all the way out here in Jersey. It's cold here in January. Got my boy, Zach. What's going on, man?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Season 2. I know we left on not much of a cliffhanger for Season 1 last week, but we're here ready for new things, new adventures in 2022. Hopefully a better year than last year. Last year was a good year, but you know, it's always best to hope for a better year, right? So we got a lot of stuff planned this year. We kind of talked about it in our episode last week, things and goals we want to do with the Comic-Con podcast. This episode, we're going back to basics though. We're just going to talk some news, talk some drama, and talk some shit. So welcome back. Thanks for being with us. What do you got, Justin?
Well, man, we definitely have our course of action. We definitely have some drama in the community, and it's actually something pretty big. We, of course, got some articles for some movie stuff, some TV stuff, and, of course, what do we always end with? What are we currently reading? Shout out to all the new listeners and all of our old listeners from 2021. We really appreciate everybody. So let's get right into some of the action. So the drama, this is some artist drama slash whatnot community drama.
So I'd like to make a caveat here, is I have no idea what this is right now. So yes. Justin doesn't tell me things before, so that it's always fun when we do the drama live like this. So I'm excited.
Yes. So I found out about this the other night over at my boy X-Men Mike's pop-up auction that he had. Okay. There was some stuff going on.
Strong name, X-Men Mike, strong name.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, he's a huge X-Men fan. You definitely like him. Probably got to get him here on the show. But so there was some issues with an artist out there. And the artist, I don't know if you know Ali Garza?
It's not familiar. No. What kind of work?
So he typically does like cover art. He's done the a lot of Zenoscope stuff.
Okay.
Typically a lot of those pinups. He created that what was that book? Ball and Chain that is optioned right now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And he did a couple DC things that I know of. Not too much Marvel that I'm aware of, but he's more of like a Zenoscope guy. I remember buying some stuff, and I've met him here and there at conventions and trying to get commissions from him. But so the drama is that he, and I'm going to kind of break everything down. So we're going to listen to some audio real quick from Mike's auction, and then I'm going to go into some more of the issues. So someone in the comments of the live chat said, to add some Ali Garza fun news, in his Whatnot sale, he had some sketches for $40. And with Whatnot, if your seller cancels a sale or doesn't ship it out within 2 days, you get a strike on that account. So this guy, Daymares, he's also on YouTube. He's also an Instagrammer. He purchased something from him. And what happened was he ended up canceling it because there was some, you know, when you're an artist and you're going on Whatnot, do you really think that selling a sketch for $40, you know, do you think that's good enough? Maybe a little bit more, but I'm going to play the audio and then I'm going to get kind of into some more of the.
So to clear it up a little, so that Daymares, he's the one who wrote the comment in X-Men Mike's chat.
Yes, he's the one. And he was also in Ali Garza's.
Okay. So he was commenting about the issue that happened to him. In yes. X-Men Mike's. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to play a little quick audio, and then we're going to get back to, because one of the other, I guess, panel members actually said something, and he knows a little bit, of course, about that as well. So we're going to do a quick little one-minute clip.
Man, I knew. As soon as he put that second piece of OA up there, and he's like,
he canceled your bid, Daymares? What the fuck? That's fucked up.
Well, he said, he's like, bids aren't coming through. He goes, I'm going to have to talk to Whatnot, and I think we're going to have to cancel all these bids. I was like, bullshit. Nobody wants your stuff.
What a fucking snake, man. That's so fucked up. He's a bum.
Oh, who did that to him? What's up?
Al Garza. Al Garza was on live on Whatnot the other day, and he was selling original sketches that he had drawn that he would probably charge $1,000 for, I'd imagine. Somewhere probably around the realm of, no?
So I paid $280 for my commission.
He's a cheap
11x17.
Yeah, well, this is something he actually did and meant to sell. So he charges a $300. He was on Whatnot, and he was showing him. He's like, I'm here helping out Whatnot, like as if Whatnot needs him or something.
And he's right.
He's like, only starting off at a dollar, and no one was bidding on a shit. And Dave Mayer's won this badass Venom for, I think, around 40.
$40. No, he's the only one that bid on it.
I wasn't going to bid because he doesn't. I mean, because he fucked you over. I wouldn't give you my money, but he wouldn't have took it anyway. Shit. Bastard.
Yeah. So. Wow. So I reached out to Daymares because I had to get this. I feel like I'm a reporter here on the Comic-Con podcast. So I reached out to Daymares and I said, you know, like, what happened? And he goes, well, exactly. He's been in Ali Garza's Whatnot sale, just kind of questioning because he also owes Daymares a sketch as well as X-Men Mike and some other people. And basically what happened was, you know, he bid on this Venom sketch, won it for $40, which is a steal for any type of sketch from any artist, in my opinion. And then basically, like he was saying, like the saying, oh, well, I don't think the bids are coming through. I think there's an issue. I'm going to have to cancel. So he ended up having to cancel. He basically canceled the Whatnot auction and canceled the sketch. So it's very odd. Like, who does that? Especially like a well-known artist. It's not like you're someone who's up and coming or you're just someone who wanted to get on Whatnot. I mean, I know of Ali Garza for years. And the fact that, and I'm sure people out there listening may know the name as well. And the fact that like you're a big name artist and you're going on Whatnot and you're trying to like screw people over because your bids weren't what you want it to be, because let's say normally you may charge a sketch for 200 and it only went for 40. Like, don't go ahead and cancel that, because not only that, as a seller, if you're the one who cancels it, that's actually a strike against you. That's not a strike against the person. Like, if the person requests to cancel, that's one thing. But if you're just going out there canceling people's, you know, one auctions just because you're like upset, like if I sold a book and it didn't go for what I was thinking and I just canceled, being like, the book is damaged. I'm not going to sell this to you. Dude, that looks terrible. And as a seller, it's one thing. But from an artist, like, that's ridiculous. So what do you think about that?
I mean, well, okay. So a couple questions. Has there been any word? Was there any kind of response from Whatnot? Did he actually get a strike? Do we know any of that information?
So he's notorious for waiting a really long time to, you know, get sketches done by people. So as far as the Whatnot thing, we don't really know the strikes, because you really don't know unless you're a seller. Like, you could see on your Whatnot profile if you have any strikes.
Of course, I can't see on like yours if you have strikes.
No, the only thing you could see is like my review, like 4.99 or 5 or whatever. But only the seller can actually see if he has a strike or not, because after 3, you get kicked off of Whatnot. But you know, that's just kind of in general Whatnot selling. But the fact that like you're gonna go and cancel it, like Daymares could actually reach out to Whatnot and be like, yeah, I won this and he canceled it. And you know, he's also been in there, and other people have been into Ali Garza's Whatnot sales just kind of to troll, like asking where people's sketches were, because that's what it is. Like, they're waiting for sketches. And you know, after conversating with Daymares through Instagram, make sure you follow him, DayyMares, and as well check out his YouTube channel. He actually was waiting on a sketch for a little over a year, and he was supposed to get his money back. And eventually what happened was, it took so long and Ali was not giving the money back to Daymares, that he actually found his wife on Facebook and asked basically what's the best contact number to find, because he, you know, needs to get the money back. You know, I know it's kind of petty in a way, but it's not like this is the first person that this has ever happened to.
It's not petty if it's the only avenue. Like, if you've exhausted all other avenues of approach and that's all that's left to you, it's not petty. And some people be like, no, it's totally off, you know, out of line to ever contact the wife or something like that. No, bro, that's on you. If you've made yourself so impossible to contact and someone needs to get a hold of you, especially for business purposes, that the only way is contacting their wife, bro, that's totally in bounds, in my opinion. So what my opinion is on this whole issue is, it's it's certainly shady. That sucks. You know, like, we both have, I mean, you have done a lot more Whatnot auctions than I have, and we both experienced, you know, sometimes a book not going for what you want it to or expecting, and it's just like, well, shit, you know what I mean? You take the loss and you move on, because then you also have the victories as well, where some book that you didn't think was going to go went for, you know, a lot. I mean, that's just the life of auction sales, you know. I guess my thing with this guy is, you know, I don't know. Then obviously, I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts about Whatnot, and I don't find it to be much of a seller's market as it is a buyer's market, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think if you're a buyer, you can get great deals. I've never gone on. Does this guy only sell like art? Is that like what his channel is?
Yeah, well, especially with, right? So that's like the thing now. There's a few other artists. Like I know Art Germ Collectibles has just recently been approved and they had a sale this week. I know Ariel Diaz, Divinity Art, she's going to be on there soon. I know obviously Tyler Kirkham, he does some selling on there and and this is something that I've been probably meaning to bring to the podcast a while ago. So, of course, you know, Whatnot Comics did the exclusive variants, right?
Right.
For Invincible number one. So the first one they did was with Invincible, and then the other one was with Omni-Man. So a few weeks ago on Tyler Kirkham's Whatnot sale, they actually sold the original art for the Omni-Man volume, that second variant that came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously on the back, it has like all the sellers' names. So I actually screenshotted this. This was actually back on, I actually have the details here. It was back on the 25th. It was actually on Christmas Day. It was at 5:43. They sold the original Omni-Man original cover art, and it went for $8,351.
That seems kind of low to me, right?
The fact that like someone's bidding that on a Whatnot auction is like insane. Like,
right.
I've been in like the Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, I've watched those auctions just to see them. Mm-hmm. And I've seen up to like $2,000 for sometimes packs, but like a comic original art, like, and I think that's where Whatnot is going because it's live. It's not like you have to go to like Heritage Auctions or Comic Connect or eBay to like bid on stuff like that. That's the highest priced item I've ever seen go on Whatnot.
I mean, it seems low to me for like, for OA in general, you know, like 8,000, don't get me wrong. It's a lot of money, but, by no means am I discounting $8,000. But yeah, you know, the thing is too, is you got to understand that, like, I think the OA it's a little bit more niche, mm-hmm. And, however, than like the comic book collecting, right? So you're going to have a smaller group of people that are bidding. And if you're doing an auction format, obviously the less people bidding, the less money you're going to get. So, I don't know, man. I think that's super shady. I would hope that Whatnot would do something about it. To be honest, I don't know if they will.
A strike if that's what it is. Like, if you, as a seller, just keep getting strikes, then you're just going to get off. Like,
I just don't necessarily trust that Whatnot would actually get rid of people who have a name or a following right now. It seems like Whatnot has gone the path of wanting big names on there. So I don't see them necessarily booting off someone like that, even if, you know. That's what I'm saying. That's why I was curious. Can you tell if they have a strike mm-hmm. or not? Like, we should be able to know. Because to be honest with you, if I look at someone's account, you should tell me if they have a strike or not. It's the same as a review. Like, if I'm, you know, hypothetically, if I'm buying from you or I want to get into your auctions, or if I even want to follow you, like, well, only look mm-hmm. at Nemesis Prime, blah, blah, blah. Damn, this dude's got two strikes, man. Like, maybe I don't want to do his auctions, you know? Like, I think that should be public knowledge. If not, then, you know, then what's the point of this little arbitrary system that no one knows about? So you could have three strikes. You never know. I don't know, dude. I think it's shady as hell for sure.
Well, I think the strikes is a lot better than like eBay, where you just get cases open up against you and nothing really happens, because sometimes you can end up just calling eBay and being like, well, yeah, these are the conversations that I had back and forth with the buyer or whatever. And nothing changes. Like,
right.
So I don't know. I get the eBay thing, or I get the Whatnot thing. You know, you obviously can see their seller review. Like I said, it starts out at a 5.0 and kind of drops as people go less and less. I've never seen anything less than like a 4.95, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
And I think obviously as you sell more, it will go less. And of course, then you look at how many followers they have, how many items, you can see how many items they've sold. So if they've sold maybe not a lot and they have a low review, yeah, and again, I guess I get where you're coming from as far as the strikes. Like, you should be able to see that, but I guess that's more private, so people will still bid on their stuff, right?
Right, but I mean, like, the strikes are obviously like the bigger offenses. In fact, those would be the ones that I feel like they should have a strike. I mean, it should explain the situation. Like, mm-hmm. I want to know what the hell you did to receive a strike. You know, obviously, you know, the reviews and like the comments are usually going to be like, oh, guy packed his stuff shitty or something like that, you know, or oh, it took a long time to ship or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Strikes are obviously going to be something bigger, like, dude canceled my item. Like, I'd like to know that. So I'd be like, well, I'm not bidding on this shit. Like, why would I bid on this guy's stuff? If he's not going to get the price he wants, then he's just going to cancel my item. Like, what a waste of my time. So I'd like a little bit more transparency. That'd be nice.
Yeah. I think it's still in beta. It's still upcoming. I know they recently, I don't know if you know this or anybody out there listening knows it, they actually just updated the website and also the app itself that you can now watch live auctions on your desktop.
Oh, and I didn't know
you can actually go right into whatnot.com and you could see, and it's like completely different now when you log in. So you can actually have multiple auctions open by just having different, you know, tabs open. It's crazy. Like, I watched a video of a YouTube content creator and he had like four windows open and he's in four different auctions at the same time. Like, it's insane.
Wait, he was like, oh, he was doing videos of himself. Yeah, gotcha.
He was actually watching. Yeah, he was doing like a YouTube live stream of him going over whatnot and some of the updates, buying, selling and stuff like that. And then he showed off the new website and he showed like how you can have multiple auctions now open. So like you want to follow two, let's say, because like, let's say someone out there is following you and me are both doing live sales at the same time.
Yeah.
So we don't miss anybody. Like you don't miss a book. You could do it on the desktop. And then also maybe you want to be watching somebody who's doing like Pokemon cards or sports cards or something like that. So it's completely up. It's constantly updating.
Yeah, that's cool. That actually helps too. If you're like doing it in your phone, you could actually watch your own stream as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good idea too. That's a good point.
So,
all right. So that's our community drama for the week, already starting out 2022 with some community drama. And it's not from an Instagrammer or YouTube content creator. It's actually from an artist, a big name artist, in my opinion, you know, someone who's not just a local person who sets up at a local show, like goes to New York Comic Con, goes to Emerald City in Baltimore and what else. So,
and just stay to the end of this episode because we might have a little bit more drama as we get into the later parts of this episode. Something that we talk about a little later, I'm going to bring up.
Oh my God. I love how you and I don't talk before these
episodes. I know. Well, to be honest, dude, I didn't even think about it until right now. Like I kind of had planned on, I don't want to give away what's coming up, but
that's fine.
We were talking about it and blah, and then I was just like, you know what, man, this could have been in the drama section also. So we'll save it too.
All right. So a little tease,
teaser trailer.
All right, so let's move on to some, let's do some comic book news. So we have a few articles this evening for the comic book world. So this is actually something that I feel like kind of went under the rug, as they say. This was posted back on Dark Horse's webbook, Dark Horse Comics, of course, one of the big, big five, I'd say, whatever. They're obviously getting back the Star Wars title this year, but over on darkhorsecomics.com, there's an article that was posted back on the 16th of last month. So Dark Horse Comics announces print edition of Scott Snyder's We Have Demons. And now you're thinking, well, Scott Snyder is already doing Noctara and a bunch of other little other things. But what's this We Have Demons? And the only reason I found out about We Have Demons is because I was looking at this month's solicitations. And because I was looking for Star Wars Adventures and Star Wars High Republic Adventures, and I couldn't find it. And I saw this We Have Demons. So the We Have Demons is actually a Comixology original, part of the Best Jacket Press little run. So there was like three or four different titles that different content creators, writers and artists got together and did originals on Comixology. So now coming in March, Dark Horse Comics is actually going to be printing these. So of course you have the best-selling writer, Scott Snyder. You have an artist, Greg Capullo, and anchor, Jonathan Kaplan. So they are going to be coming out with this series. The first issue is coming out in March, issue two is going to be in April, and issue three is going to be in May. So really interesting stuff because I had no idea what this is about, and I had to actually look. I actually read up on it. So it's,
I was going to ask if you hadn't read the issues at all, like on Comixology or anything.
No. So all I know, based on what I was reading about it, is that it is it's an original. It's original from him. It's basically the conflict between good and evil is about to come to a head-to-head with a teenage hero who embarks on a journey that unveils a secret society, monsters, and mayhem. So that's kind of like the little tidbit that they got over at Comixology. I did see some of the art from Capullo. Pretty interesting stuff. So again, I think this is something that you may want to put on your pre-orders, because you don't really ever see a lot of Dark Horse books, you know, pop, but especially with Scott Snyder behind it. I definitely think it's going to be, and of course, Greg Capullo, definitely think it's something that everybody should go and check out. Of course, Comixology, you know, the fact that they're original, and it just came out, the fact, the Comixology of for We Have Demons actually just came out in October. So it's not too long ago that this was dropped on Comixology, if anybody, you know, maybe reads their books via digital. But now they're finally going to be making this print version of this. So again, We Have Demons issue number one is coming out on March 23rd of 2022. Be sure to check it out. There's some variant covers as well. One's done by Jock. Of course, Capullo's on there. So what are your thoughts on another series by Snyder and Capullo?
I'm excited. I mean, there's been a gap, you know what I mean? Like I've kind of, there's like a hole in my heart for Capullo and Snyder. Ever since they kind of left DC. So I'm excited to read it. I think I saw that it's a 3-part miniseries as well. So, you know, we've talked a bunch on here, how we love like, consolidated stories that contain storylines that just begin and have an ending, you know, three issues might be a little too short, but we'll see, man. I mean, if it does well, obviously, you know, we had an article previously where we said, you know, Dark Horse is making some moves. Like maybe they're trying to get back in the game, and bringing writer like Scott Snyder is one good way to do it. So if it does well, it might become an ongoing.
Yeah. So I just went over to bestjacketpress.com, and you know, here's a little bit more about the book. So in every folklore throughout history, there's a struggle between angels and demons, between beings of goodness and monstrous beings of darkness. But what if this struggle, this war for the soul of humanity, wasn't rooted in the mystical or supernatural, but in science? Our hero Lame was named after the first female angel, Lasmua. I'm probably butchering that. She never really understood her father's devotion to their small town Utheran church. And when he dies under mysterious circumstances, she starts to question everything she thought she knew. One night, a distraught Lamb visits her father's church looking for answers. What she finds there is a monster, a hulking demon named Chopper, who claims to have worked with her father and now offers to work with her to solve her father's murder. So that's a little bit more expanded than... That's some interesting stuff.
Yeah, and they also have, I know you talked about variant covers. There's also a foil cover by Greg Capullo, like a red foil logo, which is pretty cool, man. I love all those, like, you know, the 90s type covers and stuff, like the die cuts. And speaking of die cuts, dude, and since we're talking about pre-orders, did you see the Something is Killing the Children die cut?
Oh, yes.
This month?
Did you get it? The Something is Killing the Children 21's coming back.
Yeah, dude.
There's a lot of variants for that, and I'm actually trying to push my local comic shop to order 100 copies to get all the variants.
He's like, yeah, I'll push it, and then he doesn't sell them all.
Well, I figure if you get up to there's a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, and a 1 in 100. So if you order 100 copies, you get the 4 1 in 25s, you get the 2 1 in 50s, either 1 in 100. So I said, you know, this is how much I'm willing to pay. And then I'll get all the regular covers as well. And, you know, he was like, all right, well, let me know before the end of the month. And I was like, all right.
Damn, must be nice. I don't have that kind of pull at my shop for sure.
I mean, I didn't say like, oh, I'll take them all for like $100. I had to, you know, I had to throw out a decent number where I'm like, if he's already going to make his money just based on me, and then he's still going to have variants left over to sell to people. Yeah. Then he could just like, whatever, throw some of them to CGC or, you know, put them in, I don't know, like the dollar bins, who knows. So what do you got an article for some comic stuff, right?
So, yeah, so we talked about this a couple weeks ago also, the kind of revamping of the X-Men moving forward here in April or so. We're getting a lot of the titles are ending currently. We have the 10 lives and 10 deaths of Wolverine storyline coming up that'll kind of put a pause on X-Men. And then after the end of that, all the X-Men titles will kind of kickstart back up and a lot of new ones. One of the most interesting ones coming up is Immortal X-Men. That's going to be written by both Justin and I's, one of our favorite writers, Kieran Gillen, is writing the Immortal X-Men. So it's going to focus on the histories and machinations of Krakoa's governing body, the Quiet Council. So if you haven't been reading lately, there's been a lot of shakeup in the Inferno miniseries. The Quiet Council has changed. Some members have left, some members have died, and there's been new members to replace them. And there is a lot of shady members on the Quiet Council. So this title is going to focus completely on the Quiet Council and how they kind of run Krakoa. And Kieran Gillen said he was really excited to write it. He did have a funny comment where he said he didn't think if like Hickman wouldn't have left that he wouldn't be writing this book, that this is very much like a Hickman's genre where it's people sitting across the table doing political machinations. He's like, this is a Hickman type book. He's like, and since Hickman's leaving, he's like, that's the only reason I'm writing this book. But he still said he's excited to do it. I'm really excited about this. I mean, the Quiet Council has been kind of ruling the mutants on Krakoa for a while now behind the scenes, but we haven't had a lot of focus on them as like an organization. Obviously, you got Mr. Sinister is doing a lot of creepy shit in the background, obviously living up to his name. We have Mystique and Destiny are now part of the Quiet Council as well, who are kind of up to their own schemes. And I feel like one of the most underappreciated and like characters that aren't getting as much game time with the Quiet Council that is super interesting character in X-Men lore is Exodus. So I'm hoping to see more of him now, you know, that now with this Quiet Council issue. So, or series, I don't know how long it's going to run, but Kieran Gillen really doesn't disappoint. I don't feel like ever. So I'm pretty excited about this. This is probably the X-Men title that's coming out soon that I'm the most excited for. So.
Yeah, we talked about it, that all the titles are getting like revamped, right?
Yeah, so I think not the only ongoings that are staying are, I think X-Men, the flagship title, isn't renumbering. Marauders is renumbering, X-Force is renumbering, and I'm not sure about New Mutants. But those are like the three titles that are staying, X-Men, New Mutants, Marauders, and X-Force. I think of the four titles that are staying from the old run, and then you get a bunch of new titles as well. So it should be good, man. I love what's going on with the X-Men right now. So it's so much fun. I also found that there's one of the things he said is Kieran Gillen said that, which is really great to hear too, that he wasn't really like, so he had a funny thing to say that during like COVID and the pandemic and stuff, he wasn't really doing work for hire. Like books anymore. So he's been more open to work for hire, like jobs, you know, with like Marvel and DC. He kind of had been doing a lot more like the creative own stuff. But the thing that I really liked what he said was he's been reading the Krakoan books and he's heard nothing but amazing things about the X office in terms of how collaborative it is and how it is genuinely a supportive place. So that's cool. It's always cool to hear that, like, one, he's a fan of the books, and then like the group, obviously, you know, within Marvel, there's going to be like a group of like the X office, is I guess, you know, what they call it, who are talking about making sure everyone's on the same page and like, you know, continuity is kept up and stuff. And that the fact that they work so well together, you know, it's cool. It's cool to hear. So I'm excited about it. That'll be in April. I think it comes out in April. So
nice. Well, of course, like anybody who read the Hickman stuff, you know, he completely changed the whole X-Men universe. For the better, I would say. And then, you know, we've talked about it numerous times, like you said, you know, Kieran Gillen's a great writer, and I think he's going to be doing some great things this year for the Marvel and the X-Men family. So,
yeah, for sure. You know, and like Hickman, I think we've talked about this too. Hickman's great. Sometimes he can be a little much for me. Like, I mean, did you try to read his latest little series, Decorum? Did you read that at all?
Decorum.
It's like 9 issues. I think it was with Image, I believe.
Oh yes, I read the first issue, and that's as far as I got because that was
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird, dude.
Very wordy.
Yeah, man. Like sometimes with him, and even I'll be honest, at the beginning of like that House of X and Powers of 10 stuff, like there was so much you'd have pages full of script, you know, like reading backstory and stuff like that. And of course you have to kind of do that exposition to kind of like change the game a little bit, but yeah, sometimes it can be a little much at times.
Oh, it's sometimes daunting to the point where right. You're just like, oh my god, there's no way I can get through all this,
right? And I'll be honest, in some of them, like I feel like in the X-Force title, sometimes you'll have a whole page of exposition and it'll just be to have some snarky comment, like nothing's actually valid reading material in there, and it'll just be like some little snide comment there, and I'm just like, really? I just waste all my time reading that page for just that little bullshit comment. But anyway,
all right, interesting stuff. So that's what for That's all we got for our comic book stuff. So let's move on to some TV and movie news. So you want to go first on the TV?
Sure. So we all know that Riri Williams from Ironheart is coming to Disney Plus, and they are rumored to be bringing a legacy Iron Man villain to the MCU. So a new rumor indicates, this article is from comicbookresources.com, and a new rumor indicates that the Ironheart series on Disney Plus might bring in the successor of a famous Iron Man villain to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it's rumored that they might be bringing in the feature the son or daughter of Obadiah Stane. The character is described as in their 40s, brilliant and comedic, but all may not be what it seems with this character who has secrets to hide. The potential appearance of Ezekiel Stane has not been officially confirmed. So, I mean, they don't know who it is. We do have, obviously, we know that Obadiah Stane died in Iron Man 1. There was no indication that there was any son or daughter around. But we do have a character, Ezekiel Stane, who showed up in a very unknown comic, The Order. Did you ever read The Order?
No.
It came out during, like, I believe it was the Dark Reign storyline. And it was like a 12-issue series. And it was like all new characters written by Matt Fraction. And Ezekiel Stane was introduced in The Order number 8. So if you're out there, I guarantee you, you can find The Order in dollar bins. Like, they are not, no one knows. Because I actually have the run, and I've been trying to sell it for years, but no one wants this garbage. But hopefully, Ezekiel Stane, you know, if it ends up being him or some, like, you know, version of him, maybe this will sell. So look for that Order number 8. But yeah, so we could be having some Obadiah Stane family member show up as a, you know, a nemesis to Ironheart. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you definitely, that's the problem with Riri. She's in like the Champions. She had her own title. She really doesn't have any villains. Like, she doesn't have like a direct,
right?
Whatever, you don't like villain. That's basically the easiest word to put. So if that's what they need to do, and especially with Armor Wars coming, there's got to be older characters in the Iron Man legacy of villains that you can bring in. And if it's not an, or it's, if it's not like a big name, like let's say Crimson Dynamo or you know, like Whirlwind or any of those characters that use like different types of armor, then yeah, then you need to bring in like these newer characters who are maybe a little bit younger to go against Riri, and obviously the way she's going to be in like a suit of armor like Iron Man is. So I'm excited to see, newer characters, especially in the MCU, and especially a character like that has no like long lineage in the world of Marvel Comics.
I agree, but I do think this is, this I feel like is one of the biggest problems with these like new versions of characters. You know what I mean? Is that inevitably they always have the same villains as their predecessor. So, I mean, tell me if you can come up with like one character that is like a new version of an old character, a legacy character that doesn't fight the villains of the legacy, that has their own like nemesis that actually is well known. Like, I'd be surprised, because I'm trying to like run through my head. So like Miles, I can't think of any villain he has that's not a Spider-Man villain. Who else do we have with it? Kate Bishop? I mean, they're Hawkeye Avengers villains. Ms. Marvel. I don't know. I, to be honest, I don't know almost anything about Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell you too many. I guess like what's it, Ultimatum? There's that character Ultimatum, which is just like Miles from like our universe, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole thing with him? And then I guess he had like a newer villain that showed up in a more recent series that people are kind of like specking on. And I guess to be Miles, like that's really what you need to do. I guess if Miles is going to come to the big screen down the line, like you really need to look at his villains. Like,
I mean, I think his biggest one, I would say, is Prowler. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, obviously Prowler is a legacy villain to some extent, but not to like no importance until, you know, the Miles connection and stuff, obviously. But
agreed.
You know, but I'll even go back further than that. I mean, we've talked about this in with like She-Hulk. When we were like specking on, oh my God, who's going to be the She-Hulk villain? Everyone's like, who's She-Hulk's villains? Like Abomination, you know, like the same. Obviously, we're getting, what's her name? Titania, right?
Yeah, but that's like a Hulk-ish.
I think it's a Thor villain. Yeah, a Thor and like Hulk villain. Yeah, so I think that's the trouble with these characters, man. Sometimes is you revamp them and then they focus so much. It's very, it's it's hard because you want to be like, oh, this is a new character and we want to make it to be our own. But then they rely on the legacy of the previous character to build this mm-hmm. character too much. Like, they don't create new villains for him. So I don't know. I'd love to see Ezekiel Stane show up just so I can get rid of my order series and possibly sell that order number 8. But I would also like them to create a new character. You know what I mean? Like, don't make it. Like, let's see Iron Man fight, or like, goddamn, does it have to be someone in an iron suit? Does it have to be? Like, could it be something else, like a monster or something? Like, why does everyone got to fight? That's the biggest problem with the MCU, in my opinion, the villains, is every single hero only fights the villain that's just like them. Right? Like, yeah. Black Panther fights Black Panther. Iron Man fights other Iron Man. Thor's fighting against Guardians. You know,
and like his sister.
And his sister. Yeah, dude. I mean, Captain America's fighting Nazis and Winter Soldiers and stuff like that. You know, all super soldier type.
He fought Winter Soldier. That was Super Serum, you know.
Right. Dude, Ant-Man's fighting another guy who goes up and down in size. Like, come on, man. Like, get something a little bit out of their weight class. So
I think the Kang thing in the next Ant-Man is going to be interesting to see how they do that. So
anyway, kind of going on a rant there.
No. Hey, that's what it is. You know, we never know where we're going to end with these conversations, and I'm sure people enjoy listening to it. So heading on to one other article before we get into what are we currently reading. I think this was pretty funny. This was over posted today over on IGN.com. Batman Michael Keaton reveals why he left before the third movie. So, of course, if anybody doesn't know, Joel Schumacher took over after Tim Burton's first two amazing Batman movies back in the late 80s, early 90s. So the article goes into saying during an interview with Backstage, Michael Keaton explains why he left the franchise after Batman Returns and quoted, "I remember one of the things that I walked away going, oh boy, I can't do this. Schumacher asked me, I don't understand why everything has to work and everything's so sad. And I went, wait a minute. Do you know how this guy got to be Batman? Have you read? I mean, it's pretty simple." And then he goes on. So, you know, the question is, you know, why did Keaton suit up as Batman in the first place? And he quotes, "It was always Bruce Wayne," he said. "It was never Batman to me. I know the name of the movie is Batman, and it's a huge iconic role and very cool and culturally iconic because of Tim Burton. His artistry is iconic. I knew it was from the get-go. It was Bruce Wayne." So, again, I completely understand. Like, Joel Schumacher's movies are, to me, as being a Batman fan, atrocious. Like, it took away how amazing Tim Burton did it. And that's how Christopher Nolan's done it. That's how Matt Reeves is doing it. It's a dark, they're dark movies. Batman Forever and Batman and Robin became so campy and so vibrant with colors that it just, that's not Batman. And that's the reason why you went from Batman Forever having Val Kilmer, and then he was in and out in one movie, and then you had George Clooney in for one movie, because these actors, they just couldn't portray Batman. Like, I would never put Val Kilmer or George Clooney on any of, like, my top five Bruce Wayne or Batmans without a doubt. So I just thought it was pretty funny to put that in there, because Michael Keaton's that he's just like, screw this. He's like, I was Batman.
And, so, you know, I kind of agree and I kind of disagree to an extent. Like, of course, the Joel Schumacher stuff. Yeah, it was so campy and just absurd. Don't get me wrong. There was parts of Batman Forever, like, as campy and crappy as it was. Jim Carrey was a pretty great Riddler, like, in a way, and the weirdness. Right?
The villains.
But to hear Michael Keaton talk about, and this is going to come from this is definitely a personal opinion of my own, but talking about, like, Tim Burton being this, like, so dark and stuff. Like, is he forgetting the scene where Joker was walking and had the parade? Like, that was campy as fuck, dude. Okay. I actually can't stand Tim Burton. I dislike Tim Burton. I don't like his stuff. Maybe I like Edward Scissorhands. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I like Nightmare Before Christmas. I can maybe stomach Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I can't stand any movie now that has Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, and Tim Burton's ex-wife, because it's literally the same goddamn movie with the same people all the time. Overacting, over makeup, just absurd. They ruined Dark Shadows.
Funny you say that. That movie's coming to Netflix, or just got added to Netflix. Yeah,
it's horrendous. It's horrendous. And the original show is something I grew up on. Like, and it was old as fuck when I was a kid, and I grew up on it. But I just can't stand Tim Burton. So to also hear people like laud about Tim Burton, like, oh, he's the greatest Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't. It wasn't. Like, Nolan's is the greatest Batman ever. But, I mean, I don't disagree with Michael Keaton, you know, stepping away. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's fine. You to each his own. Again,
of course.
I still think he's the best Bruce Wayne, in my opinion, as short as he was. But, and that's just, and that's what it is. And Joel Schumacher, just his movies. And again,
oh, yeah, they were garbage.
And then again, like Batman and Robin. I mean, you know, everybody out there, if you watched it, come on, Poison Ivy is Uma Thurman in the 90s. Like, yep, I'm fine with that. Like,
that was great. Cool. Yeah. They made Bane like just monster, and then nipples on this bat suit. It's like, come on, man. The movie was more about like Batman and Robin like disagreeing with each other than it was about anything else.
Mm. Yeah, that was the whole issue with that one.
Yeah.
So before we get into what are we currently reading, do you want to go into this drama that I don't know about?
Oh, okay. So
now I had to bring it back up.
Well, so it kind of deals with, well, let me segue because it's going to deal with some of the books I'm talking about in the
world. Oh, okay. What are we currently reading? First about what are we currently reading? All right. So then I'll go first. Okay. So of course, past like 2 weeks, and I feel like this whole upcoming month is going to be very short on books. It's very odd. Like when you go to the comic shop, there's not a lot of titles, and I don't understand why. And even when I look at like final order cutoff, it's just crazy. So, you know, I got two books, of course, last week, briefly talked about it, didn't get a chance to read it, but the Stray Dogs Dog Days number 1 of 2 came out. It is the continuation of course, Zach and I's one of our best series of 2021. We talked about it last week. This series goes into, I guess, these two issues are really just going to go into all the dogs that are part of the family that is in the original Stray Dogs series. I didn't really like it. I'm just not a fan. Like, I don't think this was needed. This was apt to me. It wasn't needed. I don't think people really needed to have an expansion of each dog. I think that's basically what they're doing. And obviously the second issue is going to be the remaining dogs.
Right.
There was, I'm an animal lover. So, and it's not like, cause everybody knows like post cat pictures and I got my cats running around here. So it's nothing against like cats and dogs type of thing. I just feel like this series was just not needed. Like,
yeah,
I like Tony Fleeks, I like Trish Frostner, but I don't know, I just wasn't feeling this, and there's so many variants, and now issue 2 is going to have so many variants. Like,
it's a bit of a cash grab. It wasn't like it was a badly written comic.
No,
didn't feel like it had a point.
Yes.
I couldn't remember which dog, but there was one dog story I actually did enjoy, and I was like, oh, that was kind of cool, but it wasn't
a big one, like the one who's
like he was all wild, and then he got like, then when his master got killed, and then that's why he was all like droopy and sad all the time. Like, I thought that one was pretty powerful, but the rest, you're right, it wasn't needed, man, but whatever.
And then, as far as this week, again, it's just like a weird, like short week of stuff like to read. So, I picked up Devil's Reign last week, which is another great book as well. I talked about it a couple weeks ago when Devil's Reign 1 came out. So, and I guess my big book this week, and this is the one that's been going all over the interwebs of first appearances, is Thor number 20 from, of course, everyone's favorite writer out there, Donny Cates. Obviously, I say that sarcastically, but I read it, and I immediately was just like, I had to go back to like the Jason, not the Jason Aaron run, the Mighty Thor series. And that's really what am I currently reading? Because the Jason Aaron's God of Thunder and then the Mighty Thor stuff are two great runs, even regular just Thor when it was just Jane Foster Thor. But that was really like and that had like the origin of Mjolnir. This is all about this first appearance of the God of Hammers or Goddess of Hammers. It's just, I don't know. I don't understand the whole hype about it. It's, and I don't want to spoil it really for anybody who wasn't able to grab a copy, and now some of these copies are going for stupid money. But that's what am I currently reading for this week. What about you? Did you read this?
So that's actually part of the drama that I was going to talk about. So, you know, and I'm not going to spoil any. I'm not going to spoil anything. It's already been spoiled. That's the drama. So if you haven't known, there has been some drama going on in the Instagram community regarding this book because of Comic Tom and his affiliation with the Key Collector app. And once again, notoriously kind of ruining interior pages and art of this comic book before it dropped. So on the Key Collector app, you could go on there, you could click on Thor 20 before the book even came out. And they had interior pages of said book revealing first appearance of this god of hammers, Mjolnir, right? The like actual last page splash of this character's first appearance. And that was not even behind a paid wall. Like you could look at it and just regular viewer, not paying for any services of Key Collector app, and boom, you can see that. So Comic Tom then went on his channel and of course said, you know, we don't like to spoil anything. We've learned our lessons, and then proceeded to spoil again, like he always does, you know, kind of being the person that he is, which is, you know, only cares about the money and the hype of being the first person. Same with Key Collector. So that's kind of been the drama with this Thor book. And honestly, I think they kind of dodged a bullet because they previously got dinged on this shit with Donny Cates, right? Like where they did something and Donny Cates like kind of came at Comic Tom for revealing something. Do you remember what that was? It was like a
year or so ago. Lords, Venom? I thought that was on the Lords.
No, that was a different one. But he came after Comic Tom for doing something as well. But they, like I said, he dodged a bullet right now because old Donny Cates is off of Twitter at the moment. So I think maybe he would have responded. But yeah, no, there was an issue that Tom and Key Collector, same thing, had revealed a, I think it had to do with the God of Winter, if I remember correctly. And
in the early Thor stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like here's the deal, dude. You should never be opening interior pages and revealing interior pages of a book until it drops. You know, I would even say as much that you got to give it a couple days, but like, I understand how news media and stuff like that works. Like on Wednesday, first thing in the morning, if you got access to it and you want to put it out there, put it out there, I guess. You know, I don't agree with it, but I get it because it also would drive up sales. And as a business practice, you know, you'd be like, hey, look, there's a first appearance here. When you come to the shop later today, pick up this book. I get that. But that's day of, man. Like to be putting this out days before the book even drops. I mean, I don't know, dude. I don't think it's very ethical. I don't think it's cool either. Like revealing these books and revealing these spoilers for that, you know, creator has worked hard to like build up to, and you're doing it for your own personal monetary gain. So that makes it completely unethical in my opinion. So
yeah.
there was a lot of like posts. You saw our boy Decor Collectibles posted on it, like always, the defender of the community. Decor, the dude goes in, man. So
love Decor and Batcave Comics, Manny the Collector. Love those guys.
Yeah, dude, they always go in and, you know, protect and obviously have a vendetta, and somewhat justified. So you know, but anyway, so Thor was one of my reads and it was good, dude, but it wasn't amazing. I don't know.
No, yeah, it was interesting. You know, the series has been, it's had its highs, it's had its lows. I definitely think it's going to be interesting to see what happens and if this character takes a form or whatever the case may be. But I think if you go back, if you get a chance, and I'm sure it should be in back issues, the Mighty Thor series, I think it's like issue 11 or 12, and they do go through the whole history of Mjolnir and how like Odin found the rock, which is Mjolnir, and constructed the hammer, and how it's kind of like an out of control being. And Jane Foster even has like a conversation with, I forget who it is, but how basically says, she kind of says to this creature, he's like, well, Mjolnir is alive. And he goes, it once was. So it like, it has like a consciousness. And now it's finally come to fruition and Donny Cates like made it be something.
Yeah. It's definitely a darker, his whole Thor run has been darker than like most Thor runs, I feel like. I feel like it's going that way too. It's going to something, I think something bad's eventually going to happen for sure. But yeah, so I did read the Thor, but my pick of the week this week was Inferno number 4. So it's the last issue of the Inferno miniseries for the X-Men, which I kind of talked about earlier. and has been dealing a lot with this, the resurrection of Destiny and her ability to see into the future, and then kind of coming up against Moira MacTaggert, who has kind of been the driving force of this whole revamp of the X-Men and her ability to resurrect and like live different lives, and that's guided the X-Men. So we kind of see the culmination of everything, and I don't want to ruin anything. There's some epic stuff that happens in this book. At the end, there's showdowns with Moira. There's showdowns with Xavier and Magneto versus Nimrod and the Omega Sentinel, which is insane. And then there's a character that people have shat on for years as being like this, the weakest, most pathetic X-Men, which honestly, dude, in the past, like since the 2000s, when they kind of brought this character back, they changed the power set for this character a little bit and made it. I'm going to talk about it. Anyways, just so Cypher. So, you know, Cypher, the character from New Mutants, he was had like ability to speak languages, right? Which was always like, wow, it's pretty shitty mutant power. You just speak any language. And he got killed early on in New Mutants. But so he comes back in like the 2000s, they kind of upgraded his power and made it that it's not just like spoken languages. It's also body languages. It's like the languages of like the computers and different things like that, which then upgrades him quite a bit. Like you can pretty much anything he sees, he's almost like somewhat of like a taskmaster type character where he sees something and he can replicate it type thing. So he's kind of been big in Krakoa because he's the only one who can speak with the island of Krakoa. And he has a moment in this book that is just pretty awesome, and it's kind of like pushed him pretty high up in the ranks of power in terms of like not power in terms of mutant powers, but power in terms of like political power with the X-Men. So it was a really cool wrap up. It was Hickman's final, you know, Krakoa Age book miniseries. And then now we're moving into like the second age of Krakoa where Hickman's going to be gone. So really enjoyed it. 4-part miniseries. Check it out. Definitely must read for the X-Men universe.
Awesome. Well, you know, I got a good send off then for Hickman, and that's pretty awesome. And you know what I like about the X-Men, and they always have like, you know, you always read about like if they're like their hierarchy, like Omega level, and
yeah,
you know, like there's different levels of the X powers where they feel threatened. Like obviously, like, you know, Professor X, Jean Grey, like those are Apocalypse, Omega level characters that are like,
right.
And that's what it is. Like characters that were so shitty, like back in the day, they've just like completely revamped them. And like, now they're like, okay, now they're a little bit higher on the hierarchy of like mutant abilities,
right,
that make them cooler.
Well, it just takes a little creativity on the part of the writer, you know, to come in and kind of be like, hey, look, man, this guy's power could actually do some decently cool shit. Like maybe if we don't just focus on his ability to speak French whenever he needs to, like he can actually do something cool with it. But did you read, I didn't get a chance to, I ordered it and it'll come in later, but did you read the Noctera special this week yet?
No, I did not.
Blacktop Bill. I really want to read that.
Yeah, no. It's on my to read list. I didn't get a chance to read that, but yeah, that may be talked about next week.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go ahead and just put that out as a suggestion to anyone to read that one as well, because that seemed like a really cool character of like one of the best series right now. So
yeah, because I think the next issue comes out soon as well. Like the next, I think it's issue 9 or
issue 9, maybe? I think.
Something like that. Yeah, that'll be out soon. So, but yeah, that's all we got for this week for our first episode into 2022. Season 2, episode 1. I'm going to come up with a new catchphrase for season 2 now. anything from your closing? Well, for me, real quick, if you're listening to this early enough, I'm doing a Whatnot sale Friday night, 9:15 Eastern Pacific, of course, at night. So if you're listening to this early enough, check out my Whatnot sale. I'm doing like 10 to 12 slabs, starting at $1. Hopefully everybody can stop by if you get a chance. If not, I'm sure I'll do another Whatnot sale. Of course, Nemesis_Prime. That's all I got. Nothing else going on. It's going to be supposedly snowing here by the time you're listening to this. So what about you, man? What do you got there for the
weekend? No, nothing going on here. Just getting through. Like we said last week, Justin and I got some big plans for this year, so stay tuned with that. I believe next week we'll probably do a mid-season review of Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it at all.
Yeah, 3 episodes in. Depends, man. We may, depending on what this episode does, Maybe we'll wait till four because there's supposed to be seven episodes. So we want to make sure there's enough to talk about. So depending on episode three or four, we're going to do a mid-season.
So. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be quite fun.
So that's all I got, man.
That's it for us here at the Comic-Con podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace out. Later.